Welcome to the Industrialised podcast, where we speak to those leading the charge towards the future of construction. This week, Darren Richards, Director of Cogent Consulting, speaks to Peter Allen, AI consultant at Prezilience and member of Acumen 7. In this conversation, Peter talks about how AI can support the training of future leaders, looks at how companies retain their culture and character with the emergence of AI, and the exciting development of agentic AI.
Welcome to the Industrialised podcast, where we're joined by Peter Allen from Acumen 7. Hi, Peter. Please tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you do.
Well, hi, Darren, and thanks for inviting me along today. I'm delighted to be here, and it's great to hear the episodes that you've produced so far on this podcast. As you said, my name is Peter Allen. I'm a member of Acumen 7. We're a unique network of senior executives. We provide advisory services and consultancy to construction and infrastructure organisations, and advise on policy in government.
Okay, good. So you've got a broad perspective across the industry. Obviously, we're here today to talk about industrialised construction, off-site manufacturing, and generally construction innovation, and specifically to look at the context of AI and what critical skills the next generation of leaders might need to thrive in this AI-enabled construction industry that we all kind of visualise. So let's start with that then. So let's just think about leadership skills, Peter. What do you think the industry's got to develop in terms of leadership skills to really harness and embrace, you know, the potential of AI in an industrialised construction world?
Well, I think we're in a unique position as far as the industry is concerned. I think we're facing some transformation opportunities from AI, but we're also facing existential threats. And these opportunities and threats are colliding in ways I think that the industry has never seen before. And I think it requires a different mindset. I think the traditional approaches of leadership that have got the industry to where it is today are not going to get us to where we want to be tomorrow. I think AI is moving so quickly, and construction and infrastructure is not the fastest moving and most innovative of industries, or certainly hasn't been in the past. I think the leadership that's needed now is something that challenges our perception of how the industry should work. I think we've been very focused on efficiency, rightly so. I think we've been very details focused. I think we've been analytical. We have a very mechanistic view of how the industry should work. And off-site manufacturing is a good example of that. And it works. It works very well and has a lot of potential for the future. But I think as AI develops, and we can talk a little bit more about the different types of AI, but as AI develops, I think we're going to need a different type of leader, one that's not thinking in a production line way, but is thinking more like the conductor of an orchestra, that is bringing in different elements, elements that have their own judgment and their own ability to act from an automated perspective. But it requires a leadership that's able to blend human and AI. And that means changing our approach to how we develop and promote leaders within the industry. I think in the past we've looked at developing the best specialists. So typically if you're a very good engineer, you will work your way up through the organisation, at some point start taking on leadership responsibilities. At that point, many find it difficult to let go of the engineering background and approach their leadership style in that mechanistic view. We structure our organisations around that mechanistic view, famously, a very siloed approach and a very production line approach to our operating models. But we need something that steps away from that specialism. And we've seen leaders move into the space of being a generalist, and we've encouraged that sort of generalist approach, building different skills away from the engineering side of things. But I think what we're looking for now in the future is a leader who is an integrator, can integrate the different challenges that the industry is facing. We need to find a way to integrate the human and the AI. I think there's a lot of debate as to whether agentic AI, and we can come back to that, whether agentic AI is going to replace so many jobs within the industry. And if it does, then once again, that leader is going to need to orchestrate what's going on across all those different agents.
And in that context, Peter, that obviously the leadership culture changes and the dynamic of the leader changes, then obviously the broader culture of the organisation will have to change to keep pace with that. So there's going to be a significant influence, I would imagine, the ripple effect of that across entire organisations would be quite a challenge, I would have thought. Just give us your view as to how do you think companies are going to make those adjustments and those changes to adapt that new culture, to reflect that new leadership that you've just talked about?
Yeah, well, this is the work that I do through Acumen 7. It's looking at how organisations can adapt and retain their culture. There's a couple of ways to look at it, I think, from a culture perspective. If you think of the culture of an organisation as reflective of the people that work there, you can think about the capability of the people that work there, and the culture is around their capabilities, their competencies, to be able to do the job that they present. But there's also the character of the organisation. And this perhaps is where the differentiator is going to start to emerge as AI starts to come in. If we think about the capability side of things, AI is offering the opportunity to replace or augment, but in a lot of cases replace, a lot of capabilities across the organisation. We're going to see a lot of the routine tasks, a lot of the analytical tasks handed over to AI. And we're seeing now with risk management, project management, and different types of analytics, being able to reduce the amount of time it takes to analyse a lengthy report or a huge public consultation. AI can start to analyse this information very, very quickly. And so the capability of an organisation is going to be handed over, outsourced more and more to AI. So the thing that's going to differentiate, if you think of that capability as a commodity, if every construction organisation is using similar AI, and let's face it, not many organisations are going to be building their own large language model or whatever they're using. They're going to be using an off-the-shelf package, therefore they're going to be inheriting the capability that's built into that AI. Then the differentiator of that organisation is going to be its character and its culture and its reputation, how it's perceived by the outside world. And that's going to be the thing that organisations are going to need to give more emphasis to. Yes, they're going to need to look at their processes, and they're going to need to standardise, and they're going to need to look at how different parts of the organisation interact and where AI can add benefit and replace where necessary. But that character and that reputation, that culture needs to be maintained through that transformation. I liken it to the word soul. It's something that I've written an academic paper on. And this is describing the soul of an organisation. Now, it's very debatable whether a soul exists generally, and whether an organisation has a soul is even more debatable. But if you think of it in principle, humans have debated whether a human soul has existed for thousands of years, and you can go right back to the ancient Greeks and Aristotle to look at how a soul might be defined. But he described it as animating principles. The idea that something is given life by these animating principles, and he described them as reason, thought, choice and reflection. Those are the things that separate humans from animals, and from animals to plants, and plants to inanimate objects. Now, if you bring together a collection of humans, a collection of human souls into an organisation, and you accept there is a concept of a human soul, then it stands to reason that the organisation is going to have a soul of sorts. The sum of the parts of all those humans is going to be greater, and the organisation is going to have some sort of soul. Now, that, depending on the length of time the organisation has existed, maybe something that the original founders developed, not necessarily consciously, but it emerged as they developed it, and that has led through the history of the organisation. And it comes through in the stories that people tell within an organisation, the history of the organisation, the way we do things around here, the way people interact. There's this concept of a soul that comes through. So the question I ask for boards is, what are the animating principles that define your organisation? What is it that sets you apart from the next organisation? Yes, you might say, well, we're very capable. We can deliver on time. We have excellent services. We have the best expertise. But as AI starts to encroach in that, as AI starts to challenge some of those capabilities and starts to replace them, what's the animating principles that separate you from AI? Why can't I just go out and do it myself with AI, you know, with a separate product? And so I ask boards, what are the animating principles that define your organisation? And then secondly, what structures protect it and what structures prevent it developing further?
So in that context, Peter, do you see that there's a slight mistrust in organisations of AI? Are people internally within employees? Is there potentially a perception of a threat to what they do and the security of their roles, and even the relationship between them and their stakeholders? Is it often that you witness perhaps a slight fear of AI from a cultural perspective?
Oh, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what AI is and what it can do for an organisation. Certainly what it can do today, what it can do in 5 years' time. I think nobody knows really what it's going to be able to do in 5 years' time. But if you listen to the commentators, it's quite an exciting and scary future of what AI could potentially do. I think, one, going back to that, the qualities that leaders need, I think this is a key question as far as AI is concerned. And one of the key qualities, I think, that leaders need is the ability to accept that they don't know all the answers, to show a degree of vulnerability, a degree of humility, and to acknowledge doubt. There's a Professor Smets at Oxford has done some work around the importance of doubt in an organisation, and he divides it into four main categories, and I think this is very, very relevant to where we are with AI at the moment. He describes the first one as hubris, the idea that, fantastic, we need AI, everybody else has got AI, we must implement it now. And so there's an overconfidence that AI is going to fix everything in our organisation and we're going to go hell for leather to do it. It's going to improve efficiency, reduce costs, we can replace a lot of people in our organisation. And that, I think, is arguably the most dangerous position to be in at the moment, because I think organisations that do that are diving headfirst into the unknown. I think they're taking huge risks. I think it needs a huge amount of preparation before jumping in like that. I think hubris, I think, needs better risk management policies, and that's quite a challenge culturally if you have a strong leader who's demanding that this is done now. I think risk management becomes more and more important, and I think in that situation people around the table need to question why are they doing it, why are they jumping in so fast. So that's number one, hubris. Number two is short-sightedness, myopia. This is where people are dismissing AI and say, well, it's a bubble, it's going to burst, this is all just hype. Maybe it is, but I think we've seen other technologies go through a similar sort of cycle. But of course, they come out the other end and start to expand again. So famously, people talk about the dot-com bubble, the late 90s, early 2000s. And as though that dot-com bubble burst the whole idea of the internet and social media and digitization and all of that. And actually, it's developed much, much further since then and beyond what anybody could have predicted. Nobody predicted the iPhone would come along. Nobody predicted apps. Nobody really predicted social media in the early 2000s. So there's a degree of short-sightedness that organizations can suffer from, that myopia. And I think at that point, it needs diversity of thought. I think if you've got a table full of people who have conformed to that idea, who have perhaps seen over time various technology bubbles come and go, certainly there's been lots of technologies in recent years that haven't quite delivered what they promised. Think of 3D printing, for example, a lot of promise around that 10 years ago or so, not really developed much further beyond creating small figurines and things like that. You think of VR, virtual reality, and augmented reality. There's a lot of promise again with that, but it's only now starting to develop, and again, that's relying on other technologies to develop. And AI itself has been through so many troughs of disillusionment, as Gartner describe it in the hype cycle, where it's promised a lot, but other technologies haven't kept up. So the work that Geoffrey Hinton did on neural networks really only started to gain traction, and he won a Nobel Prize for it last year, only really started to gain traction once, you know, he developed the algorithms to provide it, but also the availability of data and the processing power that developed over the last 5 to 10 years really enabled the ability to develop the neural networks that Hinton and others had developed. So I think the myopia, the danger there is you're going to be left behind. I think if you are convincing yourself that this is a short-term bubble, it's going to go away, It's not. I think AI is going to change and transform organisations, whether you like it or not. And I think the organisations that are able to see through that, through a bit of diversity of thought in their leadership teams. And the question for them to ask is, why not? Whereas hubris, you're asking, why are we doing this? Myopia, you're saying, well, why aren't we doing it? Why not? And then the other two areas of doubt, I think they're really important for organisations to consider. The first one is angst. So people know and feel they need to embrace AI and integrate it into their organisation. But there's a nervousness, there's an anxiety, a fear of what we're doing with this. We don't understand it. How's it going to work? People are starting to use it within organisations without any great oversight or any sort of centralised policy or control over it. And it's emerging within the organisation, but it's creating huge anxiety within the leadership teams and within the boardroom, because they just don't know how it's going to play out. So I think in that situation, this is where I work a lot with organisations, is looking at validation, looking at other organisations and peers and seeing what they're doing, benchmarking where you are in your processes, in your technology implementation, and where your people are in how they embrace AI. It's quite curious, I think, with a lot of technology changes over the last, let's say, 20, 25 years or longer, quite often staff are using the technology at home before it's available in the office. And so they're quite familiar with it. And we're seeing that, of course, with the younger generation, of course. What used to be described digital natives, I think, is a bit of an old phrase now, because it's just there. And so people are coming into the workforce expecting these tools to be available. But perhaps the larger organisations aren't agile enough to develop and to embrace what's coming. And I think a lot of that comes back to the angst. I think, yes, we can look at our policies and we can say, well, we're going to need to run a 10-year feasibility study and project manage this over a 5-year life cycle. No, it needs to move more quickly than that. But that comes with angst, with anxiety. And the final one is paralysis. It's the rabbit in the headlights. It's the board that know that AI is there and are frozen. Can't think, well, what do we do? Where do we go? And again, that's where my work and work with Acumen 7 comes in, where we start to raise awareness with boards about what's available, what can be done now, what might be coming 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years down the line. It starts to get much more fuzzy and much more uncertain as you go further and further out because it's moving so quickly. But of course, at the same time, if you're frozen in those headlamps, then you need to take some sort of action. Standing still is not an option. So we try and develop learning there, we run leadership development, we raise awareness of what's available, and we try to help unlock what it is the board is trying to achieve. So I think, in summary, I think a level of professional doubt is the quality of a good leader these days. Not to stand there and say, I know the answer, follow me, but actually to have doubt in yourself. It's not the opposite of confidence. It's an ingredient of confidence. To be able to say, well, I'm not sure, we need to discuss this, we need to go out and look at others, we need to bring in some advisory services. How do we navigate what's changing? And I think if you have somebody that is completely doubtless and operating with that hubris, I think it's borderline dangerous for the company, because they can go down a route that could be incredibly high risk.
And becomes a bit maverick at that point, doesn't
it? A maverick, exactly that. And I think in the past, you know, arguably we've celebrated mavericks. You know, we've seen them as disruptors.
Yeah.
And there is room for disruption, but I think in the world of AI, I think it needs to be considered, and I think it needs to be conscious, rather than just dive in.
And you mentioned around timelines. You cited 10 years, 5 years, you know, these kind of timelines and cycles to implement and adjust and adapt to AI. Are those realistic timescales? Are those just examples? I mean, have you got clients you're working with now that are working to timelines that are a decade long for full AI implementation? Or have you got others that are on a fast-track process to integrate AI as a core kind of business tool a lot faster than that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a mixed bag, actually. And I think most organisations are looking, we work with, are looking at implementing some form of AI now. The AI typically that we're talking about, if we break it down into the sort of three sort of descriptors of AI, if you like, the broad description of AI, which has been around for decades, really, but has only really now started to get into public consciousness, is the ability of machines to learn, to take data, and to find patterns, and to provide outputs that match those patterns. It's not a pre-programmed result. It's something that machine has learned from the data that is gathered. And a good example of that, if you go right back to the late 90s, was Deep Blue, the chess game. You know, that wasn't told every move in chess, but it was taught how to play chess, and it developed. And there was a lot of excitement then about what AI could offer. And of course, that type of AI, that machine learning, whether it's supervised learning, unsupervised, or reinforcement learning, that's really offering great opportunities to spot patterns in data. As it, going back to Jeffrey Hinton, it was developed into deep learning, into those neural networks. And so we're seeing that being used now. We work with a client on project risk management, and this client has developed the world's largest database of project risk registers. And within that, it can interrogate your risk register and tell you where the likely risks are. And that provides a huge amount of benefit to organisations. And it's repeatable. It's something that it can learn as more and more risk registers are added to the database. It grows, it learns, and it can provide more informed assessment and pattern spotting of project plans. So that's one area of AI. The other area of AI that organisations are using more and more, whether that's directed or just emergent from staff using it, is of course generative AI. And the most famous, and of course what really set the world alight, was ChatGPT some years ago, but now starting to be used more and more at home and at work, and people are using whichever version, you know, ChatGPT or Claude or whatever it might be. And that operates slightly differently. Those large language models are based on a newer technology, newer algorithms called transformers, that look for associations, that look for, they apply attention to words, to pixels, or whatever it might be, and they come back with a predictive output. Now that is not repeatable. If you were to go to ChatGPT and ask it a question, it will give you an answer. Ask the same question a little bit later and it'll give you a different answer. It's interpretive. And that comes with big risks that organisations now are only really starting to think about. Risks around what they call the hallucination problem, where AI, the generative AI, is eager to please. It gives you an answer. Whether that answer is correct or not is not necessarily the point. And there's been some very high profile examples of people taking what the AI has told them and presenting it as fact, and then later being told, sorry, this is complete fabrication. So there are risks associated with that. There's the black box problem. And this, I think, is going to be a problem for the construction industry as we move on, where decisions are not easily explainable. The AI has come up with an answer that it thinks, based on all the data that it's been fed, is the correct answer. And yet there's no way for the individual receiving that answer to find out how AI came up with that answer. ChatGPT 5 is been a bit more verbose about how it's coming to these answers, and you can see the thinking process that it goes through. But essentially, these networks, these neural networks, contain trillions, literally trillions of tokens, and it's impossible to know exactly where that answer has come from. So there's that kind of risk. That's a reputational risk, where, arguably, and this is something that I think needs to be resolved, people can claim plausible deniability. I didn't know the AI was going to come up with this answer, but it's come up with this answer, and that's what we want. So there's that. The other risk, I think, is around security of information. So if your staff are inputting large amounts of data, and even the prompts they're putting into the AI, if they're putting that into AI, then it is, if it's one of the American versions, going across the American data network, and so that can be searched. If it's via the Chinese network, that also can be searched. So if you're working with sensitive, secure information, then there is a high risk that if you're putting it into an AI, then someone else is going to be able to interrogate that and read it. So that's quite a risk. So those are the two main types of AI that I think organisations are working with at the moment, to different degrees of maturity. The third type, which I think is really where the game changes quite considerably, is agentic AI. And this is where the AI itself has the ability to... It works on a process of perception, reason, planning, acting, and reflecting. What it's essentially doing is acting on your behalf. You give it a task, what you want it to do, and it will go away and perform that task. Now, at the moment, it's still very early days, and people are using it to post things to social media, book a holiday, or things like that. But I think as it develops, and this is over the next 1, 2, 3 years, I think it's moving that rapidly, the construction industry, I think, has an opportunity to start to involve agentic AI in a lot more of its processes. And that's where some of the higher risks come in around the reputation, the perception, the culture, the character of an organisation. So those are the three types, I would say, that organisations are working with. In practice, we're seeing Gen AI used a lot, generative AI used a lot in back office functions, in finance, in procurement, in HR. Again, that's another area that's particularly interesting, where HR is looking at recruitment processes, but also development. And even appraisals now can be done using generative AI. And again, that can be outsourced to agents. Contract management and negotiation is another one that's developing rapidly. We start to use negotiation AI when we're looking at contract management. That's quite an interesting one. But we're also, and National Highways did this in 2019, starting to use autonomous plant, connected and autonomous plant. So in 2019 on the A14 project in Cambridgeshire, I think it was the world's first use of connected and autonomous plant. And that comes with huge benefits. Again, we're starting to see AI augmenting people and resources. But of course, it comes with huge benefits. It can be run 24 hours a day. It means there's no human on site near the autonomous plant, so safety is improved. There's huge cost efficiencies attached to it. So we're going to start to see robotics start to be introduced more and more into construction. We're seeing it on site now, but the ultimate aim, and the CIOB, the Chartered Institute of Building, have a very good AI playbook on this, where they set out a number of horizons. They haven't really fixed a timescale on those horizons, but they've certainly described what's going on now in AI in construction. In Horizon 1. Horizon 2 is starting to look more about that introduction of robotics on site. Horizon 3 is a fully automated robotic construction site. And that's where some of that modular construction comes in, where things can be built off-site using robots, as we see perhaps with car production, transported to site by autonomous vehicles and autonomous plant, and constructed on site autonomously. So that's probably the ultimate goal, whether that's 10 years away, 15 years away. Certainly National Highways and the government are looking at about 2040 to really develop this connected and autonomous plant to a point where it removes the individual from a construction site.
And I suppose the larger opportunity, because it's in a controlled environment, is the automation and the robotics within the manufacturing facilities. So if we're talking about large-scale off-site manufactured, modular, panelized, whatever form of off-site manufactured solution. We have a controlled environment to apply that technology, don't we? So do you see that as probably the greatest opportunity for AI in terms of the broader industrialization of construction would be to maybe channel it into the manufacturing facilities initially? Because I think it'll be harder to implement on-site.
I think that's absolutely right. I think the controlled environment of an off-site production facility is much easier to develop AI in. It comes back to that repeatable process, that learning that AI can go through. We've seen it done in car production, and there's no reason why, if the construction process is standardised and mechanised to a point where it's repeatable, like a car, then I can see no reason why that can't be brought in relatively quickly. And there's lots of work going on at the moment to do that.
And obviously it will help the information management, the design information, assembly information to the shop floor using AI, can you ensure you've got controls in place, that only the latest information, the most up-to-date, the validated design is being used on the shop floor. We see historically out-of-date drawings, if you go back a long time, even people using tablets, but they're still accessing static drawings with no intelligence built into them. It could be fabricating the wrong componentry or working to an out-of-date revision, and obviously AI tools can give real-time live data, so it could take away a lot of the quality issue as well, couldn't it?
That's absolutely right, and I think you've hit on a really important point there, that the inbuilt intelligence into the design, I think, is hugely important. And it's not just during the production process, of course. Once the product is on site, as it's built, it's still reporting data on its quality, on its condition. So asset management, I think, is going to benefit hugely from AI. One of those technologies that promised a lot some years ago, and it's still on the cusp of really delivering, is the Internet of Things. That was another area where there was a huge amount of excitement and then sort of fell away a bit, but again, is starting to come back. And I think AI, coupled with the Internet of Things, is going to provide enormous amounts of data for the construction industry, both in the manufacturing, production, but also in the actual implementation and beyond the whole life of the asset. I think will improve through that data and the analysis that it can provide. And once again, and this is something using National Highways again as an example, when they're looking at traffic management and traffic flows, the data that can now be gathered from traffic systems, from asset management, can start to build that digital twin that can help with the planning and design of future infrastructure. So once again, it comes back to that transformational opportunity where the technology provides the data. At the moment, the data is interpreted by the human, and there's an argument that that should always be the case, but there'll be some elements where the analysis of that data will be handed over to agentic AI, to an AI agent, and that agent will carry out whatever is necessary. So it might be that there's a repair needed, simple repair, an AI agent could repair that robotically. So suddenly you're starting to gradually remove the human from elements of the process. And you could describe it as an elevation of the human in the loop, as it's described in AI terms, where the human at the lower level of the production process, shall we say, is firstly helped with a new tool, but gradually replaced. And then it works its way up the value chain to the point where you end up with that leader who has to orchestrate what's going on across their organisation. Now, this is probably pie in the sky thinking a bit too far out, but you could imagine a very small group of people being able to manage a very large asset, a very complex asset, purely with AI agents and the data that it provides. That's a long way down the line, but I think as organisations start to introduce AI, I think they'll very quickly see how it could logically progress to that situation. And there'll be organisations that will want to get to that situation. But again, it comes back to that idea of, well, if you've got all of your capability being done by AI and robotics, where's the character of the organisation? If I want to do business with you, am I doing it purely on your capability? A lot of that comes back to trust, which is something I think the construction industry has relied on for many, many years, certainly in winning work and in contract negotiation. Trust has always been there, and it's always been an issue, it's always been a challenge. And I think those organisations that act in the most trustworthy way are the ones that are successful and are the ones that have survived through some difficult times over the years. But trust is something that is contextual. It depends on the situation that you're in, whether you trust the individual and the organisation that you're working with. There's a trust equation that Charles Green and others developed, that takes in different elements of why you should be trusted in a particular context. And the first is credibility. You know, have you got the knowledge, competence, expertise that you claim to have? Is it believable when you talk about these things? And that's very much what people jump to first of all. Can this person actually do the job? It comes back to that capability question. Can they actually do the job? Second is reliability. Are you consistent, dependable? Do you walk the walk as well as talk the talk? Can you actually do what you say you do? Will you do it on time? The third and fourth are a little bit more emotive, a little bit more softer if we describe them in those terms. The first is intimacy, the emotional safety that people feel, the security that they feel when they're acting with you. Am I comfortable sharing sensitive information with you? Do I trust that you're going to treat that with integrity and treat it securely? So there's an emotional connection attached to trust. It's not purely about capability. There is something there about, do I have a personal connection with you? And the fourth element, and this is something that I think a number of organisations have got themselves into very hot water with recently, individuals and organisations, and that's self-orientation. It's the degree to which someone is perceived as focusing more on themselves or their shareholders rather than others, rather than the public good that they're providing. And to give some examples, I think the water industry is struggling with that question at the moment. A number of water companies have got themselves into very difficult situations, not necessarily because of their capability. I think people understand that there's been issues with capability in some areas, but I think generally the water runs, the water quality is good. The challenges are all around the character of the water industry and the self-orientation. Are they there to just deliver shareholder value to the detriment of the public good? And there's a very fine balancing act there. And if it tips in the wrong direction, then organisations can find themselves into very, very difficult situation. So that trust, or it's better described as trustworthiness, I think Baroness O'Neill some years ago described it as trustworthiness. It's the behaviour of the organisation. Do they behave in a trustworthy way? And as you start to bring in AI to your organisation, and you start to find that AI is making decisions that you can't explain because of that black box problem, you've got the capability, but where's your character? Where's that trust going? And so that's going to be one of the challenging features, I think, in the near term. You know, I think we're only talking 2-3 years where organisations are going to really need to describe and articulate their trustworthiness. Why should I do business with you? There are many organisations now that have got the capability to deliver on time to budget because AI is making the production process and the construction process much more efficient, much easier, much more reliable. But it's the difference between, do I trust what's going on versus, do I know what's going on? I've handed it over to this organisation. Can I trust that they're actually going to deliver and deliver in a way that is helpful to my reputation? So there are all these sorts of questions I think that AI is throwing up, not just the technical questions. These other questions around these existential threats that I mentioned at the start. These are the things that are going to define the organisations that survive over the next 5 to 10 years.
You mentioned in passing, really, earlier, the Gartner hype cycle. It'd be interesting to just wrap up this conversation now with trying to perhaps define where you think we are on that cycle, whether we're at the peak of inflated expectation at this point in time, and you know, it usually is followed by the trough of disillusionment, I think it is, before we get up to the productivity plateau, I think, in the end. So where do you think we are at the moment? Are we still got a lot of hype to go yet before we get to that kind of peak of inflated hype and we're about to kind of have a bit of a reality check on this? Or do you think, we're somewhere else on the cycle?
Yes, it's really interesting. It depends who you talk to, really. I think, as I say, AI has been through a number of these cycles over the years. Mm. And I think certainly since ChatGPT launched in 2017, I think, was really when the transformer engine started to really come online. ChatGPT 2022, really, when it really started to get into the public consciousness. I think we're seeing a huge amount of hype at the moment. I think we are gradually working our way up that peak of hype. It's slightly different, I think, this time. Certainly people are expecting a bubble, similar to the dot-com bubble of the early 2000s. I think nobody would be surprised if suddenly the stock of AI-related companies started to decline sharply. But I don't think that's reflective of the AI technology itself. I think there's a number of people, and it depends, once again, who you listen to and who you speak to, a number of people really quite pessimistic in a human survival sense, really quite pessimistic about where AI is taking us. And even Geoffrey Hinton, the godfather of AI, is quite pessimistic about the ultimate progression of AI becoming more intelligent than humans and starting to threaten human existence. That's you know,
therefore becoming a threat.
They're becoming a threat. Eric Schmidt, similarly, Google CEO, is in a similar place. But others, I think Sam Altman in particular, is starting to talk more about what AI can do for the benefit of humanity. And so I think there are two sides to this hype cycle now. I think there's the public perception of hype, and I think people would agree that there's everywhere you go now, AI is everywhere, or at least it's been told it's everywhere. But at the same time, underlying that, there is this gradual introduction of AI, and we use it every day, whether we know it or not. Image recognition is AI, voice recognition is AI, even product recommendations on Amazon is AI generated. So it's there, it's in the background. So if you take the public consciousness of AI, I would say we're in a hype, we're getting to the peak of hype. But if you actually take the practical implementation of AI, I think it's a steady progression, but I think it's actually going to rise very rapidly over the next few years, and we'll see an exponential growth in it. So there's two graphs at play here, public perception and reality.
And the driver, finally, because we're nearly out of time, but the driver then, is it going to be driven by government's desire through public contracts and large framework agreements where they're going to embed a requirement for AI, or do you think private sector will see the opportunity quicker and grasp it because there's a commercial benefit to it? Where do you see the driving force in construction coming from?
Yeah, I think and there's a lot of discussion about regulation in AI, and the UK and the US really haven't got any great desire, I think, to regulate AI heavily and are not wishing to stifle innovation. So I think the innovation there is going to come from the private sector. Certainly government is providing help to companies to develop AI solutions, and there's a lot of good work going on there. But I think in terms of innovation, I think that's going to be driven by the private sector, and I think it's going to need to be in construction, a partnership between the technology companies and the construction companies. There's a huge barrier to entry to develop large language models or even complex AI machine learning systems. So
is,
I think
is that barrier a financial barrier, or is that just a knowledge barrier?
Both.
Right.
Both. Yeah. I think the need for processing power. We're going to see huge demands in data center development over the coming years, and in energy supplies. So I think there's huge barriers to entry there. There's huge barriers as far as expertise is concerned to develop the algorithms needed. I think if you take the rest of the world, I think EU is slightly different. The EU have brought in their own AI Act, which is a bit leaning more towards the regulatory side of things. And I think companies looking to work in the EU are going to need to conform to that EU Act, which is going to be a little bit more restrictive, but at the same time, arguably, a little bit more secure. So I think there's a bit of navigation needed there, depending on where the organisation operates, to work out how rigid and how compliant their AI systems are going to need to be. From a regulatory perspective, there's still that reputation perspective that they're going to need to maintain compliance with. So I think there's a number of different ways to cut it, but I think largely the innovation is going to come from the private sector.
And construction's not known for moving particularly quickly, and being particularly innovative. You know, we're known for, you know, building the same way now as we did 100 or several thousand years ago, potentially. So obviously we're always kind of benchmarked against aerospace and automotive, et cetera, et cetera. Do you see AI as being perhaps a catalyst to accelerate innovation within the industry now? Perhaps it could be truly game-changing for our sector.
Yeah, I do. I think it is truly game-changing. I think organisations that embrace it consciously, I think, are going to be ones that succeed. I think if you just allow AI to creep into your organisation, it will creep in, it is creeping in, you're going to find that it's going to be difficult to control. You're going to find that you're not really going to understand what's going on across your organisation pretty quickly, because it's going to be handed over to AI. It's very obvious now, I think, when somebody has written a document via AI. I think people are now starting to use AI to book meetings, to write the meeting agenda, to write the papers for the meeting, and to then write the minutes of the meeting. And you think, well, where's the human element in that? And is that just a degree of laziness on the individual's part, that AI can do things more quickly? Why should I invest time? There's a famous saying, I think it's from Winston Churchill, that I didn't have time to write you a short letter, so I've written you a long one. And AI is similar to that. I didn't have time to write an in-depth paper, so I've got AI to do it. So you think, well, what does that mean for the organisation? Can you trust, once again, trust? Can you trust that AI paper has really been assessed and contains the knowledge and experience of the person who claims to have written it? So I think, going back to your question, and the speed that construction organisations can move and innovate, I think they need to consciously embrace AI now, so that in 2 or 3 years' time, they are on the front foot and they're not playing catch-up.
And embrace it correctly, plan, and embrace it in a structured fashion, which I think is, you know, a message that's come across loud and clear, you know, during this discussion. You know, I think the danger is it becomes a little bit like the Wild West, you know, and it's a little out of control and everybody's kind of, you know, running off in different directions. So it's been a very interesting conversation, Peter. Thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure to discuss your views on AI in construction, and from my personal perspective, to be educated on some of the aspects of AI that I didn't understand before we had this conversation. So thanks very much.
Thanks, Darren. It's a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Industrialised Podcast. This podcast was produced by Industrialised Construction Media. The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Industrialised Construction Media. If you enjoyed any of the themes discussed, then the Industrialised Construction Journal is the perfect place to hear more from the experts who are dedicated to the advancement of our construction industry. For more information, head to www.industrialisedconstruction.co.uk.